Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to another edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In the last decade, whether as a result of natural or man-made disasters, the nation's emergency response apparatus has faced enormous challenges. Overcoming these challenges and forging a national emergency response network for the 21st century requires innovation and teamwork. With us today to discuss his efforts in this area is our very special guest, Craig Fugate, administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Craig, welcome.
Oh, thanks.
Also joining us is Dave Abel, IBM's Vice President for Homeland Security. Dave, welcome.
Thank you.
Craig, let's start off by learning more about your organization. No doubt most of our listeners are very familiar with FEMA, but could you give us an overview of its history and evolving mission? In what way does it support the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's overall mission?
Sure. I mean, most people are familiar with FEMA as what they think we do, but it really you have to step back and understand that FEMA is not the team. We're part of a team. And FEMA's history actually goes back to the era of civil defense and the role of the federal government in dealing with the threat of war and World War II, and then ultimately the threat of nuclear attack as developed after World War II and the advent of the Cold War. But out of that, what we found was that the federal government had also been responding to disasters caused by natural hazards. And that history had gone back into the 1800s when the federal government had from time to time done impromptu ad hoc responses. Congress would pass legislation, the federal government would respond, provide assistance. Up through the Depression, examples of the great floods in the Midwest and other disasters where the administration and Congress began repeating these programs enough that they started placing them in various parts of the federal family. U.S. Department of Agriculture had disaster programs. What ultimately became HUD became a part of that disaster program. And then obviously the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in flood fighting and the role that they had. Well, by the time you got to the 70s, we had had a history now of civil defense in this country on the federal side, very much divided between nuclear attack and then the other federal agencies responding to natural hazards and other man-made, such as nuclear power plants or chemical spills. The problem was at the local level, state and local governments were the same people doing both missions and coined the term dual use. That many of the things we did for preparing for nuclear attack, sheltering, warning systems, and building capacity and capabilities were the same things that were being used every day in communities for much smaller events. Overall, the governors found that by the mid-70s that it was very difficult to deal with these programs. They were spread all over the place. No one agency had responsibility. So National Governors Association proposed that perhaps there should be one federal agency charged with both missions, both the civil defense mission but also response to the natural and man-made disasters. And out of that, President Carter issued an executive order creating the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, in 1979, which began bringing these programs in from everywhere from the Weather Service to the Corps of Engineers, from HUD, as well as many of the civil defense programs that were in DOD and other parts of the federal family into one organization with the idea that as a nation, local and state governments are going to be the first line of defense in any type of event, and that the federal government's role would be supporting that when it overwhelmed state capabilities, but also focused on what they saw was intrinsic federal responsibility, which was protecting the country in the event of a nuclear war. And out of that, we've gone through many gyrations. Notable events, Hurricane Hugo, Hurricane Andrew, the Loma Prieta earthquakes, and other natural hazards that had really began people focused mainly on the natural hazards. And as the Cold War cooled off and eventually had died down, more and more emphasis on the natural hazards and technological hazards and very little emphasis on the other threats. 9/11 happens, and obviously we're back into looking at the terrorist aspects of asymmetric warfare. Now, this was being addressed prior to September 11th, but not quite on the level we saw afterwards with the formation of the Department of Homeland Security. Much like FEMA was a consolidation of various federal programs that were dealing with supporting state and local governments to disaster, Homeland Security's mission was to bring in various parts of the federal family to address the threat of terrorism, but also what happens if there is a disaster, whether it is terrorism or whether it is a natural hazard or man-made technological hazard, again, bringing those elements into Homeland Security. So we had a credible response that is now taking on the aspect of, again, how do we build resiliency in our communities against a wide spectrum of threats, some of which are cyclic, such as hurricanes, others which are strictly unpredictable and can happen with little or no warning, such as cyber attacks. attacks or infrastructure failures, or as we constantly deal with earthquakes and other hazards that don't have a time scale or a season.
With such an important mission, would you give us a sense of the scale of operations for your organization? How is it organized? What's the size of its budget, its geographical footprint, and the full-time employees versus standby emergency response employees?
FEMA's responsibility is for all of the United States. Well, that starts with the American Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, crosses all of the continental United States, Alaska and Hawaii, but also includes territories that remain as part of the United States, American Samoa, Guam, and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. So we actually cross the international dateline in our responsibilities. So that is divided into 10 geographical regions, of which we have regional offices and a regional administrator and staff in those 10 regions to work with our primary day-to-day customers, which are the state emergency management agencies, those state governors, under our system of response to disasters. Local governments respond at the event that they need additional resources. They go to their states, and states coordinate those responses. And if it's warranted, governors may then request to the president federal assistance, and on behalf of the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security, FEMA is the agency that coordinates that federal response to those disasters. Among that staff, you have about a little over 4,000 career service staff. The temporary hires, or what we call our disaster reserve workforce, is scalable. Right now, probably between 3,000 and 4,000 folks, depending upon how many more recent disasters we've declared. Again, we have a lot of smaller disasters which may not make the national headlines, but they do warrant request and approval by the president for assistance, and so we are constantly adjusting our staffing to continue that work. But we also have a lot of legacy work from the 2004-2005 hurricane seasons, as well as hurricanes Ike and Gustav, which were later on. So while we have a lot of open disasters, we are constantly prepared for the next disasters, whether they are a localized event where we're in support to the rather large-scale events to the catastrophic.
So it's a good description of the mission of FEMA overall. Let's focus in a little bit on you, your responsibilities as the administrator. Perhaps you could walk us through a typical work week and the types of things that you face on a regular basis.
You know, a typical work week at FEMA is almost an atypical situation. It can range from I'm in the office meeting with our staff, moving forward on our objectives. I spend a lot of time as one of the secretary's component heads working with my other components and within DHS, Homeland Security, on our overall missions, depending upon, you know, where we're at in the budget cycle, where we're at as far as Congress and hearings and presenting, a lot of time there. But also working with our constituents and being out in the field and talking to people and presenting. Again, we see FEMA as not the team but part of a team, so we spend a lot of time building that team. And so I like to look at, you know, if I'm not responding to disasters and we're not in those situations, that on a day-to-day basis, we're always looking for opportunities to build and expand that team, whether it's within DHS, under leadership of Secretary Napolitano, whether it's with the rest of the federal family, but more importantly, with a lot of people that are not traditionally seen as part of the disaster response team. We tend to, in this country, have what I call a very government-centric approach to disasters and problem-solving. But I find that we oftentimes overlook the very things in a community that on an everyday basis are providing services, whether they're volunteer or community or faith-based organizations, some of which have disasters as their core function or one of their core functions, like Partners in the American Red Cross, but many others who have capabilities but are not traditionally seen as a disaster responder. The private sector. We often talk in government about private-public partnerships, but take it a one step further and look at what is the private sector doing every day that we may have to support or augment a disaster, but we shouldn't be operating separately from? Like retail. In many disasters, there's tremendous need to get in emergency supplies. But historically, government has never looked at the private sector as part of the team. We've always looked at it as an exclusion, that we would do all of this if they were not going to do anything on their own. And that's not true. I mean, if you run a major retail groceries chain, you're going to try to get your stores open. So I'm trying to get us to become more open to the idea that the team is not just government. It is not just your traditional response agencies. It's also the organizations that provide services every day. And how do we incorporate and work more effectively so that perhaps we should be asking questions such as, what can I do to get your store open, instead of asking how many more points of distribution do I need to set up as a government response?
So in addition to the necessary partnerships that FEMA has, what would you describe as being the top three challenges and the solutions that you're facing right now?
Well, internally to FEMA, we have several, but externally, I think it's one, getting people to understand that Small to medium-sized disasters, the government-centric response has been working very well. In fact, it gives the illusion of working much better than it can. I think the first challenge is people need to understand that in large-scale disasters, everybody has to participate to the ability they can. We put a lot of emphasis on personal preparedness, and people say, well, is this because you're saying that government can't do everything? And I'm like, yes. And then they're kind of taken aback and going, well, we're not used to people admitting that you can't do everything. And I says, well, in a large-scale catastrophic disaster, take an earthquake or another natural hazard that can be geographically very challenging, it's kind of unrealistic to expect that resources from outside that area can get to everybody fast enough if we're not maximizing who's already there. If you look at disasters, you don't look at just the press clippings and the official reports. You look at what really goes on. Oftentimes, what really happens is people helping each other are the initial response. And too often, we've gotten to this point where government wants to control everything. Government wants to bring order to something. Government wants to know what's going on. In a large-scale disaster, that's almost impossible. And the efforts you're wasting there are actually taken away from what you really need to be doing, which is setting the stage to empower people and empowering fragmented pieces of a response system that's been heavily stressed to be successful. So I really try to focus in on this idea that we need to look at the public not as a liability but as a resource and recognize that there are many people out there for a variety of reasons that are going to need assistance. But those of us that can and should be able to take care of ourselves and our families and contribute in a disaster who fail to are now competing with our most vulnerable citizens for what resources we can bring to the table. So I say this one is that it cannot be what I call this government-centric approach to disaster solving. We really have to engage the community and quit treating the public as a liability. Well, the second part of that goes to something that we've not really been able to do until recently, and that is actually carry on two-way conversations with the public in a disaster. We can broadcast to them. We can tell them stuff. We can send them information. But we've not been very good at soliciting from the public what's going on in the disaster. Oftentimes you'll hear, you know, we have to wait for the official reports to come in, but we're already seeing news footage or people sending out images of what's going on. And the tendency is to discount that because it did not come from an official source. And again, it goes back to the first part of this is if we're not trusting the public, then we're really negating a tremendous resource to tell us what's going on, how effective we are in our response, and what the needs are based upon what the survivors are seeing in that environment. And then I think the third overall challenge is time. The urgency of us building this capacity is only based upon when the next disaster of the magnitude of a Katrina will occur. And too often people have now associated that it's going to be a hurricane and that it's hurricane season. And oftentimes, you know, I hear this, well, you must be glad it was a quiet hurricane season. And I'm going, what part of earthquakes don't have a season, don't you understand? And it's the sense of urgency that I have. And I, as I tell my staff, if I seem impatient, there's a reason. I have the patience of a gnat. Is I don't know when the next disaster is going to strike. I don't know when it's going to be of such magnitude that many of these things that we're talking about have to be in place. And so it's my sense of urgency that, you know, people are saying, do you have like, you know, you get all this information. Is there something you're not telling us? And it's like, no, I'm not telling you anything I don't know. I'm just looking at, if you just limit yourself to the world of natural hazards, there's enough things that can happen that we already know quite a bit about the hazards that will stress the system to a breaking point if we're not building this team.
Craig, would you describe your career path for our listeners and how you began your career and what brought you to your current role?
I actually started out being a volunteer firefighter and becoming interested in emergency services, became an EMT and ultimately a paramedic with Alachua County, Florida, which is Gainesville, Florida. Moved up through the ranks to a lieutenant in fire rescue. I really thought my career path was going to be in the fire service. I enjoyed what I did. It gave me tremendous satisfaction. Everybody always talks about the unexpected opportunities and being able to not always know what the future is, but never turn down opportunities. I got a phone call saying, hey, we want to bring you downtown. You're a new lieutenant. You need to get some more management experience. You need to come down to headquarters. And we want to detail you down here for 2 weeks, and you can pick from one of three things: working on a preventive maintenance, working on our hiring assessments, or working on our disaster plan. So I thought I'll do the disaster plan. That would kind of tie into my coursework. That was in February 1987. And that was the last time I worked as a lieutenant on the road. I got in there. It was an interesting program. It wasn't staffed. One of my early requirements was to brief a new county commissioner and the county manager on the program. And in that briefing, the county manager had come from a county that had a much stronger program and realizing that he needed to build that program, suggested to my boss that I be given that task. Out of that, we took our program. We grew it. And then again, I got another phone call from Joe Myers, who was director of the state emergency management agency in 1997. saying he had just lost one of his key deputies and asked me if I'd be interested in coming to the state. And I said, yeah, I'd be interested. And through that started a process where I came to the state of Florida. In 2001, I was planning that to be my last hurricane season. I was actually looking to come to FEMA and had told my boss that this would be my last hurricane season. I wanted to give him advance notice. Of course, he then told me a month later that he was leaving, and Governor Bush changed my plans once again because he asked me to serve as his interim director of emergency management through that season. And then September 11th happened. And all of a sudden, we go from being primarily focused on man-made and technological hazard, and some emphasis on terrorism. We were not totally away from that subject. We've been working with Justice with a state Homeland Security grant programs prior to that event and had laid some foundations. But Governor Bush, a month after the attacks, asked me to serve full-time as his emergency management director. He kept me on into the second term while much of the country was focused on the changes after September 11th. We faced in 2004 four back-to-back hurricanes, which really tested our ability to operate in the state. And it was really, I think, kind of a reformation of the fact that we were building a team against all hazards, not just against one threat. And many of the capabilities we'd built kind of harkened back to the old days of civil defense of dual use, that many of the things we had done and things that had happened to build unity between law enforcement and fire rescue, hospitals, a lot of the resources we were able to add actually contributed greatly to the state's ability to respond as a team at all levels of government. So with that, Katrina, obviously the change in the administration, I was very comfortable. I was working at this, at, you know, this year for Governor Chris. I was very happy in my job. And I got another one of those phone calls. It was an invitation to come meet with Secretary Napolitano. And that started the path that led me now to be the administrator of FEMA.
So with that experience, what are the characteristics for an effective leader? And more importantly, what is the characteristic in your mind to an effective emergency management leader?
Different than I think people are used to. One of our tools we use in emergency management across the response community is the incident command system. Oftentimes, people portray it as a top-down management system, more along a military line or a public safety line. And emergency managers, by and large, we represent the elected leadership, and we are charged, by and large, to coordinate all of the aspects of that political leadership's team. The things that I find are most useful is, one, recognizing that to bring about a true team, you have to be less of a person who takes charge as much as a person who builds trust and confidence and builds collaboration upon many organizations that oftentimes on a day-to-day basis may have competing interests, but in a disaster must work well as a team. It means you have to give up a certain amount of direction and control and spend more time clearly articulating what the mission and goals of the team are, but empowering your team to carry those goals out. And it goes back to the concept of disasters by their very nature. The larger they are, the more people try to gain total control and have this ability to say we know everything that's going on, the less likely they'll be successful because instead of changing outcomes, they're still spending a lot of time gathering information and trying to figure out what's going on. So I find that the skills that have been most valuable to me is being able to let go of control and give it to the team and create the environment for the team to be successful and to operate in a manner which is safe for them, but at the same time maintaining the accountability to the political leadership on the outcomes we're trying to change. It's a different framework than what I was brought up with in emergency services. The more I try to control it, short-term results were actually better. But in the bigger, more complex disasters, the worse the outcomes became because we were now wrapped around process. And I found that it was often better to identify who's really smart, who's really got the capabilities, really who's got the inherent authorities to deal with this, and let them deal with that and have the rest of the team support them. So our job on behalf of the president and secretary is to make sure that the entire federal family is able to support when a request comes from a governor or another federal agency. We should come in there to be able to support a governor, not come in as all of the resources showing up saying we're here to help.
How do we respond better to catastrophic disasters? We will ask Craig Fugate, FEMA administrator, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.